Hey everybody, happy Friday. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee. I am super excited about today's show. Actually, I just got finished recording it, so I wanted to do this intro before I let too much time pass. We really talked about what I would consider to be the state of humanity right now. So just so many nuggets in there. We went on for just over an hour, so it's pretty long. We start with a rolling start, so you'll notice as I go into the episode, we kind of go right into conversation, and what's happening is Tracy is getting ready to lead me and Danielle through breath work. Now, when we actually get to the breath work, I shortened it to just a few seconds, so you won't have to actually just listen to us breathing and me starting to tear up. All kinds of things came up. But in that, if you can just kind of get through that, we really use breath work to root the entire conversation, to start talking about what's going on with humanity right now, and like, what are the kinds of things that are coming up, and what are we being invited to because of what's coming up? So again, just honored to have Tracy Hohlmeier and Dr. Danielle McGinnis both back on the podcast to talk about some really insightful topics that could really help a lot of people. Without further ado, onto the show.
Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show.
Of meditative breath patterns. One is a halo active, which is like second stage activation, and then triactive is that like really activated state. So in that, if you are trying to work through power or anger or like a stressful situation, activating a particular traumatic event, you want to dive straight into your body and really get in that space, triactive is going to be the best. But if you haven't experienced it before, right? Like my very first time doing an intensive was over an hour long in this breath pattern.
Wow.
And while it was great, right? Like I worked through a lot of stuff, I wasn't actually prepared for what was going to happen. So, you know, just as a disclaimer, right? In any of this type of work, you're activating responses and reactions in your body that you may have not prepared for or worked through or even accessed, touched right?
Before.
Like,
okay.
I believe that we were given our breath to remember. To heal ourselves, and we've forgotten. So we breathe to remember. We breathe to go back into these spaces where, as you guys all know, and I'm sure most of your followers would be listening to, in a way that unlocks the parts where we've stored away in the body, those broken bits and pieces. And not to say we are broken humans, but there are fragments of things that happen to us that are stored in our body, and those pieces of us are broken. So it's like a reclamation and bringing those things back in, but just to be prepared that those things can come up, and sometimes they feel really heavy and hard. So, and just a real quick like breakdown of some of the physical and emotional responses that come up in breath work. If you're doing a meditative session, you can get things like tetany, which is where your hands kind of clamp or claw. It's totally normal. A third of people that do breath work get it. It's just an activated level of energy that creates tension in one release point or another. Oftentimes people get it in their hands, their feet. I get it like around my mouth. And if you notice that, like a tingling sensation, a tightening sensation, just kind of breathe into it and see, what am I holding on to here that needs to be let go, right? Sometimes with, I'm like, what am I not saying when it's around my throat chakra and jaw and all that other stuff? And then you can have temperature shifts, you can have tingling sensations, some lightheadedness. I've actually had more people relieve headaches than get headaches, but headaches are a possibility. There's sexual, sensual response. Anything energetic in your body, right, can come up. That's physical response. Emotional responses can be anything from laughing to crying and everything in between. I've had times where I'm straight giggling and I'm like, I'm so happy to be in my body. And then there's other times where I'm like, you know, and like fully, you know, whatever. But I've also had times where I was in an abusive relationship, choked out by my ex, and I physically went back into that space, pulled his hands off of me, and was like, you don't own property here anymore. I'm going to need you to vacate premises, you know? So there's just a huge spectrum of emotion. So that all that to say, it is common. It is normal, right? If it feels abnormal, that's actually, you're doing it right, right? Mm. You're accessing the part of you that's supposed to be happening. So... we'll start out with like a continual conscious breath, and it's like,
so in through the nose,
in through the nose, out through the mouth, elongating that exhale, right? Like the release of CO2 from the body actually contracts your amygdala and that sympathetic nervous system that says, oh, what's happening here? So that you can actually pull into that parasympathetic. And then the triactive breath is all through the mouth, and it is a belly, chest, and then a release. So it's belly, chest, okay. Right? And it takes like 5 or 7 cycles to like feel normal in it, because it's abnormal to do belly first. Oftentimes we go
right
here, so we're doing the reverse of that. And it's really to push past where you think most people were breathing in that like very shallow breath, and then to go deeper first, then to feel the lungs is actually the way that you want to activate this triactive. So that way.
So that's what triactive means.
That's triactive, okay. Right? It's a 3-part breath, the tri, and then activating the breath. And this is the most active breath pattern. Again, doing it, you know, in the context of a podcast, we're going to stay at it for like a minute, maybe.
Okay.
In a full meditative session, we would do this breath for like 8 to 12 minutes with follow, you know, like a pre-breath and then a follow-up breath. So at the end of the triactive, what I'll ask you guys to do is hold at the top and just feel what is happening in your body. So after a minute of this activated breathing, and so we go... And then hold and notice where if your shoulders are up and releasing. Before you release the breath, notice if you can drop into that. It's like a curve of chaos is what I was taught, right? And our all this activity is happening. The whole point of breathing is to get into our body in a way that feels safe. So even though the chaos and the overwhelm of the energy is activated, we're in a safe container, and it's perfectly normal to feel overwhelm and safety at the same time. So that when you go into the world where there is overwhelm and chaos and fear, right, that we can also activate our safety in ourselves and draw that out of ourselves. So cram all that into like the Cliff Notes version, right? It's a lot of information. And I just say, you know, obviously have a guide if you're doing any type of meditative, right? All the disclaimers here. It doesn't have to be me, but I'm open to it. There's all types of free ones online. There's so many methods, Wim Hof and so on. I went through the pause training method because they're commitment to understanding the breath was so thorough versus like pay $1,500 and slap a sticker on it like most coaching programs that it's ours is a 7-month program. We go into the traumatic part of it, which was my lane anyways, so it felt really good and aligned for me to go with them. So if you're ready, we can get started. Does that feel good?
Yes. Okay. Quick for the listener, at the beginning, you mentioned something I didn't understand. Second stage. What is that?
Okay. So there's actually three meditative breath patterns in what I facilitate, right? So there's a hybrid active, which is the, like just introducing. So that'd be the first stage of activating your breath. We're doing third stage, like for this minute, because I want you guys to get like the full expression of it, but that would be the hybrid active. So that's the forced inhale through the nose with a relaxed exhale, right? So, right? And anytime you're pulling in that oxygen, your body goes, oh, I'm getting some feels here. What's happening, right?
Right.
Halo active is the second stage, and that is in through the nose, forced, intentional, powerful, and forced, intentional, powerful exhale. Either way, I differentiate or like I oscillate between like my or my, if I want to be like ice princess or fire breathing dragon, right? Whatever I'm feeling to process out my body.
Okay.
And then the tri-active is that 3-part breath. It is the most activating for your body. So that's the third level of the meditative breath. Again, normally you would do it laying down, flat as possible, completely, you know, controlled. But we're in this environment. We're safe here. So I just don't recommend anybody doing it on their own for the first time. No driving and no in water. Those are the rules with breath work.
Wonderful.
Cool. All right. So feet flat on the floor, making sure you're not crossed in any way because we don't want to constrict the blood. Sorry, she's going to keep nudging you there. And just shutting down the eyes if that feels good, letting your hands be on your lap, at your heart, your belly. How does that feel?
Feel different.
A little bit of emotion, a little bit of stirring up in the system, for sure. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I felt just like cold. Like coldness and throat, kind of how you said. Just like cold air around my throat.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing how just that 1 minute of breath can really move us into a space of feeling our body. And we live in our body all the time, and we don't even access these feelings, these emotions. We don't call to them, and we don't witness them so often, so many occasions. And we're in this world. Like, we're supposed to be doing this all the time, right? And just these few minutes can really activate the system.
Right.
What came up for you?
Well, okay, so disclaimer, I've been processing a lot in the last couple months. Mm-hmm.
You need an hour long, for sure.
It's interesting for me, like, so for the listener, you can't see, there's like just tears coming down my face. Interesting, I felt my whole body was wanting to recoil and like curl up.
Yes.
And I was like, I like felt my feet leave the ground, and that was kind of a good mental cue to like ground myself again.
Yeah.
And then I sort of just sat with that like recoil for a minute. But then the moment that I didn't recoil, I just felt like all this emotion just like explode up to the top. So there was that.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love that. And it's one thing I've noticed with my breath work is that it's not like we're always on the journey, right? People say like, I've healed. That's bullshit, right? We are always healing. There are always layers. There's always a new invitation to what we've experienced and what we've gone through. What I've found with my breath work is that it's transformed it from this place of like, oh, it's tough to go there, to it being my actual fuel, to being, it's with me all the time, not in a way that's like hard or heavy or sad, but where it's like, I know this space. I sit with it. I am a witness to it at all times. And it's transformed from this like hard recoiled place to feel and go. And it's hard to like, yeah, man, this is my, not in a monotone. I can say this injury, this trauma, this wound to anybody because I'm not feeling it, but in full expression of my feeling, I can articulate it in a way that is moving and monumental to me and what I'm doing and where I'm going.
Mm. I think what's fascinating is, so in the Bible's Old Testament, there's a poem that starts off all of creation. It's a poem about how we got here. And it's kind of like a poetic rendering of the human condition in some sense. And so what's interesting is that in that poem, there's this idea that before form was spirit. And also this idea that same spirit is the animating force that's like within us.
Absolutely.
And what's interesting is the Hebrew word for spirit is ruach, which is actually breath. It's the same exact word.
Oh my God, I'm like gonna die right now for saying that. It's amazing. And it aligns so, like I said, I believe we were given breath to heal ourselves, to move through these spaces, to like be present with our body in a way that nothing else gives us or is activated in us, and we've just forgotten, right? When you look back at like evolution, even like everything was done with ceremony, with song, with movement, with breath, and now we go through like a funeral procession line in dead silence. There's no big fire. There's no dancing. There's no celebration, right? You go to, I mean, of course, COVID, but like even that with birth, There's like one, two people in the room. It's very sterile. It's very medical, right? And then you spend weeks in like solitary before you introduce your baby to the world. Like it used to be ceremonious. It used to be loud. It used to be invitational. Mm. And we have just shed all of these things that were the way. We were used to be nomads. We used to physically move from place to place. You couldn't hold on to any kind of emotion for too long, right? Because you were walking for 100 miles every day, right? Or maybe every few days, whatever. I'm not good with mileage, but you know.
Right.
But I think that's the thing with breath. For me, it has come to me in a way. I studied a lot about trauma. I went into a lot of traumatic work that heavy, caseloads, right? Where these stories make you just come to your knees in pain for the other human and what they experienced. And every modality, every healing, even in the medical side of things, breath is foundational.
Mm.
And we have forgotten to use it I breathe every day. Obviously we all breathe every day, but I mean, I breathe intentionally 3 to 4 times a day. Even if it's just a few continual conscious breaths, I'm in traffic, right? You mentioned on the podcast, I just listened to yours the other day about the guy that cut you off and like having grace for him. And maybe he has a story, right? I got cut off on the way here. I'm like,
yeah,
yeah. Accessing my grace, grounding into the floor, right? Like if I get there at 9:07 instead of 9:05, it's still all good, right?
Yeah.
You know, and even that, or if I'm having a particularly rough time, like what kind of breath do I need today to bring me home to my body?
Well, I really like that approach because, you know, the day that I recorded that podcast, I got cut off later, right? That day that it aired. And I just had this feeling of son of a bitch. Like, I want to yell at him. I know that ain't helping. I want to yell at me. So there's nowhere for that energy or emotion to go. And
absolutely.
So I like the idea of incorporating breath just to move it. Like, mm-hmm. Because that's the feeling I had. It's like, I now have the intellectual awareness that there's no good of me yelling at him or me. Like, there's not, the things are just happening, right?
Right.
And we attach narratives and emotions and all these things to them. There's all this energy that these interactions kind of conjure up in us.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having the feeling of like, what do I do with this, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I do love that idea of using breath to just move it.
It's really interesting because like when you get in those states, it's just looking back at kind of at the way that both of us were raised, uh-huh. like, he was kind of more in a conflicting environment and like there was no conflict in my
uh-huh.
childhood. And uh-huh. so like when he gets that energy and it's just kind of like floating around in the ethers around us, I like shut down. I'm
yeah.
like, I don't.
Yeah.
So like for me to like come back into my mm-hmm. body is hard. You know, because like
absolutely,
that's like it's all
like
energy.
You sit right back here behind your body and go, is it safe to come out yet? No, I'm okay. We'll just wait a few more minutes, right? Like
totally.
That.
Totally.
And to say one thing, I'll add is the only way we move energy is movement, breath, and sound. So a carnal scream would have helped, but it like directionally, and this is like the next point is like every breath pattern, every emotion has a corresponding breath pattern. So if your emotion, what is felt by the body, your emotion is what is sensed by the body and then it's translated by the brain, your association to anger might have been screaming, which isn't necessarily bad. It's the at someone, yourself or the other person, that has to be like corrected or shifted.
Well, because that creates its own counter process.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, so you could scream to release the energy. You could breathe or you could, move your body in some way. Like, just shake it all out. Like,
yeah.
There's so many ways to release energy through those three different main types, right? So sound could be singing. It can be like a voo breath where you just resonate your vagal. Like, voo, like that deep resonating sound will activate your vagus nerve and that brings you down and into your system a little more. It can be screaming. Like we have what's called a sigh breath where you, right? And that feels really good in your body. It can also be a scream where if you're in a safe location and people aren't going to call 911 because you're screaming, you just, and scream it out. It's like usually in my car, you know, like at a stoplight and the person next to me like, okay.
Yeah, right.
But you know, when you think about your association, like I said, your body experiences the emotion. It's translated by the brain into a feeling. If your translator has been modeled incorrectly or given to you incorrectly, or your translator is broken in some way, then registering, if you take love, for example, I learned that love hurts. So when my body senses love, my brain goes, ooh, that's pain. That's pain there. Let's back it up, sis. This is danger zone, right? There's going to be pain there. And so you have to go back into your body and reassociate to your emotions in a way that is unaffected by the past, not in a way, because experience is a great teacher, right? But in a way that is more accurate and correct it to the terms of what feels safe and good to you and your body.
Hmm. Yeah, so a couple things. So my go-to is to, if nobody's with me, is I yell fuck and I punch my steering wheel and there's just this like, right? It feels totally unintegrated, right? But there's this like
I'm violence. Down with the scream and the fuck, but like the punching might,
Yeah. But like in that moment, there's like, there's nothing but a level of violence that will satiate this feeling. That's mm-hmm. what it feels like to me mm-hmm. anyway. Totally aware that it's unintegrated, not the best, got it. But like, I also have this sort of sense of compassion for myself, like going through this world without any tools. And like, I remember yelling, fuck, punching my steering wheel.
Yeah.
And thinking, am I not? And also though, there was no other option here.
Right.
Like, this was like going to just tear me apart if it didn't go somewhere. And so mostly I just say that for people that feel that like carnal or tribal or like savage
Absolutely.
Release of energy. And then I think this is a good place where your two, Danielle and Tracy, your work sort of overlaps, because mm-hmm. you talk about this idea of the boiling pot of water. You want to talk about that a little bit just for the audience, and then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. So, you know, from a depth perspective, depth psychology perspective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of these different experiences that we have, you know, we can call them complexes, and they're registered around this, you know, they have this shell where it's like our personal shell. So like whatever had happened to us over our lives, like that kind of explains like how we act. But sure. beneath that, there's like kind of like this archetypal core. So there's a pattern that mm-hmm. has like existed far beyond anything that we know. And so anger, for example, like you said, looks very different for different people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, thinking back to how anger has been expressed over mm-hmm. history, through myth, through story, like yeah. all these different things. And so, you know, anger to me is an internal sign of where a boundary has been crossed. An
yeah,
internal
absolutely.
Boundary has been crossed. And I think a lot of times there is that fear, that lack of safety in the body mm-hmm. to acknowledge that, you know, boundaries has been crossed. And so, you know, say for example, someone has a father complex, and so their father didn't teach them how to be assertive in the face of anger or how to process anger. So what happens is that when that's repressed, that assertiveness is repressed, it goes into the unconscious and like it's compensated.
Yeah.
And so there's a ton of energy building up in your unconscious. And so if you feel exhausted all the time, but you're just pissed and angry at the mm-hmm. world, it's because you're repressing that actual
Absolutely.
Expression. And so yeah. I heard this kind of metaphor, how to think about this unconscious expression. It's like, okay, so think about having a pot of boiling water, and that's your anger that's kind of stewing up in the unconscious. But like lifting the top off of it doesn't take the anger away. It just releases the pressure mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that is there. So how we take the anger away is, one, just acknowledging that it's there, and then using that acknowledgement to transform and create something like a steam engine from that boiling water, instead of just constantly lifting the lid and just like anger now. So how can we like transform that and make meaning out of it?
Yeah.
And it's usually that acknowledgement and the sitting with mm-hmm. that creates the meaning. So
yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And I've heard it said, or maybe I did, I don't remember. It's like be the teapot and not the instant pot, right? Where it's like blowing up, you know, that pressure building, and then there has to be some sort of release valve, like just let the steam roll off out of the little whistleblower, you know what I mean? And be witness to it and like you said, sit with it. And I think, like you're saying, like there's parts work, right? So in any emotional need, and this is just from like last trimester in womb to, you know, your adolescent years, everything is imprinted, as we know, in like that limbic system, right? Your rational brain wasn't witness to a lot of the stuff. Like, and a great example is your ABCs, right? Your ABCs are stored in the same spot, so you don't have to remember them at 30 years old and 40 years old, right? Like, you don't have to relearn them every time because they're stored in your memory. And also there is where you saw aggression in the space of anger, or you saw a turtle mode in the face of fear, right? And all of you learned these imprints, and they're stored back there in that system. And so in order to, like, we cannot, like, I used to think that we just had to unlearn and relearn. Like, there, you don't actually ever get rid of those systems because they're stored back there in your brain, right? There's no scrub, like, what is it, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or whatever that movie was with Jim Carrey, where you just go in and scrub out like one little section. But we can learn new tactics and new release systems to process these things, you know? And for me, breathwork has just been one of those huge modalities. And I taught meditation before, right? Like, I thought that was the answer. But then I came across so many people who are like, dude, I can't just sit still. What do you want from me? Like, this is impossible to turn off my brain. With breathwork, we actually hijack into the body and can be witness to those things. And you know, to the point about screaming, but I don't think it's a bad release as long as your anger is anger and not aggressive, right? Because when you turn that aggressive corner, it's morphed into something else. There is clean anger, right? And there is a way, I punch pillows all the time, not my steering wheel, I don't want my airbag to deploy, right? That's a risk you're willing to take, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, I also will scream into a pillow, you know, at the end of a breath session. Sometimes I, like I said, I'll cry or laugh or whatever, but it's like, you have these emotional needs, they are not met, and a part of you is created that then needs protection because it didn't receive those needs being met. Right. And we create these protectors so that we don't ever have to feel those ways again. Then those protectors become our protection mechanisms, and they're not useful in the same way. We don't need protection maybe from an angry parent or a neglectful parent when we're in our 30s. But those same protection mechanisms come in. They need a new job. Right. They need to be resourced in a different way so that we can, you know, move through life a little bit differently. My protectors were always, I didn't have my emotional needs met, right? I was a child that hurt. I was not physically loved on the way that, you know, I didn't have that emotional connection. There wasn't that touchy-feely, huggy environment or whatever. I wasn't nurtured in that way. And that didn't feel good to my system. So, excuse me. So I go into this part of me that doesn't want to feel that anymore. And I create a protector of avoidance and challenging, right? I am going to avoid you to the point that you're in my face. And then when you get in my face, I'm going to challenge you so you leave anyways.
Right, right.
Because then I don't have to let anybody in to that part of me that's wounded. So when I find myself in this challenger role, when I step, like literally, like I'm physically leaning forward, I notice that's like one of the first, my body tells me when my protector's coming online. I'll lean forward and I'm like, okay, so we're going to talk about this?
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, okay, I can sit back in this. And I don't need my challenger right now. I can have a conversation. I can stay in this same tonality, right? And really access what is my protector coming online for? What part of me is coming up and is feeling fear, is feeling unsafe, is feeling like it is being rocked a little bit that this protector is coming in for? The protector is not what we need to focus on. It's the part of us that needs the attention and then giving that to ourselves.
Yeah. So for me, kind of listening to this, one of the things that I'm just like kind of hearing is, or feeling even, is this idea that, you know, when you have these moments of rage or anger or whatever it is, unintegrated, but definitely there, you know, that all of that, like Danielle talked about creating the steam engine out of that. It's like, that's all like, there's all this energy that you could really do something with, but like you can't even touch it. Like, you know, and so it's like, yes, if you could figure out a way to corral this energy in a useful way, you could use it to like really probably like put it into creative endeavors, like really Absolutely. Do things in the world.
Yeah.
And so what I like about breath work, outside of the meditation piece, because I think you're right, it does help. The reason I started doing Wim Hof is it helped me get to the place where I could meditate.
Yeah.
Because it kind of like, you know, I needed something forceful in a way at first to like actually even relax. And so sort of the same ideas with the breath work, it helps you, at least it seems to me, like maybe it will help you articulate or even start to touch those spaces in yourself that, you know, when I say fucking punch my steering wheel, like if it were a face there, it would be a face. Right. Like it's like just all this rage that I feel like I can't even touch. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like learning, figuring out how to, and for the record, that happened far less than it used to be. but it's like, I, you know, learning tools to be able to even go into this place where you have this, mm-hmm. this intense energy.
I think learning to like hold, like we talk about this a lot, but like holding that tension between what's good and what's bad, or what you've registered as good and bad.
Right.
You know, like anger isn't bad, yeah. you know? And it's like, it's the witnessing, kind of like you said, that like really helps learn that it's safe to stay in that place without punching somebody, without being aggressive. And then from that place, if you learn to be in that place long enough, you know, that's where Jung's transcendent function comes into place, where it's like, okay, now a symbol comes forth and this is the tool I need to use to creatively use this anger towards something.
Right. It's staying in that tension is so difficult.
Like, yeah, and I think breath work helps that. I think that's a physiological mechanism mm-hmm. for staying.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's like you said, like using that boiling water as steam energy, right? And like, and doing that, I think that it's really important to hold that tension and to hold that, not even like what we do with it comes, right? But the safety that we create around our own human condition is so fundamental. Like, we haven't felt safe probably for the majority of our life to feel our feelings.
Totally.
To emote our expression, right? Like, or express our emotion, basically, you know? Yeah. Either way that works. And so I think that is like the first step. And so in the introduction of breathwork, a lot of time, it is just a grounding facilitation. And to clarify, when I say like a meditative pattern, it is the meditation comes at the end. It is a full breath work throughout. But the meditation, like you said, it actually gives you access to be able to do that meditative work. And I've gotten to the point now where my brain doesn't even really need to know what's going on, right? Like, my brain just kind of sits there like, body's doing its thing. Body's the healer. Let it go, right? Like, I'm checking out of this, because where I used to, any trauma that I had from sexual assault, rape, abusive relationship, all these heavy hitters, right? All of these huge traumatic events, we have to separate head from body. And what's happening to body just needs to just happen, and it goes, and I can't even think about it because it's too much and I've got to shut it down or it's going to kill me. And what breathwork has allowed me to do is go with my body.
Mm. Yeah, because as I felt myself recoil, even in that 1 minute, I think it was the mental cue where you said, just witness it, mm-hmm. where, because I was like getting sucked into it. Like, my mm-hmm. mind was starting to get sucked into that, like that resistance.
Yeah.
And then when you said witness it, it was like a mental cue that like, oh, this isn't, you know, whatever it is that's going on, it's not saying anything about me. It's not me even. I'm just checking it out. I'm just like paying attention to right. what's going on. And that idea of witness is the thing that I think it's the reason that Western culture can use meditation. Like, I think it's the thing that we need to regain, is this idea that everything that happens around us isn't us. It's not about us. It doesn't say anything about us. But we're so used to wrapping our identity, I think, in what we do and our achievements and all these things, that it's so easy for us to forget that we have the opportunity to play witness to the things that we're going through, whether good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, to become indifferent for even a moment to these visceral reactions at least gives you the space to process and mm-hmm. feel and, yeah.
And one thing I tell people in breathwork, especially if they feel that untethering, right? You can release the breath at any time. Mm. That's what's one beautiful thing about it. You can... I'm going to take a breath here because it's getting really heavy and hard and I know that I need to take a step back. And another thing, you can have like a totem or something in your hand to like ground you into the now, right? Like, I'm going to hold on to this while I'm breathing so that I can feel it in my hand, which means I'm in the now versus then. And there's like these little tools and practices you go in depth with when you're doing like longer one-on-one or in group settings to remind yourself that you are just a witness to the past. Experiencing the past again can re-traumatize you. You don't want to have to go back in there as if it's happening again. But if you can watch it from like a movie-like setting, right? Like you're in the theater watching this happening or in a MetaView type sense of watching it go on, you can actually go back in there and rewrite some of your memories. Mm. You know, I've taken people back into their childhood where they have a memory and they go back in and they get that little girl or that little boy and they take them straight out of where they were, right? To like heal parts of themselves so that it isn't the impossible place to go. So that they can befriend that part of them that was abandoned back there because it was always too painful to go back and revisit, right? Whether you're 6 or 16 or 26, you know, 106, I don't care, right? We can always go back. What's the quote? It's never too late to have a good childhood. It's never too late to like rewrite the story kind of a thing. We can go back into these places of our stories and reclaim ourselves from them.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's fascinating. One of the sort of underlying principles that is in the Buddhist teaching is that the Buddha like had the insight that every single moment is this new moment, this new opportunity, this new choice that you have in how to proceed, but that we are so conditioned by all of the things we've done and been through and by our past experiences that the last thing we feel is free. Like we are, things are happening to us and we're certain, but like, and that's why I think we have these feelings of like, it's just my fate to suffer. Like there is no hope because we do become so trapped by that past. And so figuring out tools to rewrite that story, as you're saying, is like maybe one of the most important things we could possibly do with our time here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like your future will be a reproduction of your past. Maybe not the same events, but like the same reactions. Yeah, the same themes, same feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and then you get in that Robin Sharma quote. It's like, you know, don't live the same life 75 times or same year 75 times in a row and call it a life. It's like, well, that happens because we do get so trapped in that projection from our past. So, okay, so one of the reasons that I wanted to have you two on here is because, well, okay, so I'll say for the listener, like as far as like I've worked with a decent amount of coaches, I've been a coach myself, and you two are by far the best, for sure.
Oh.
And so, yeah.
Hold on, say it again. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it's true.
No, very kind of you.
Yeah, it's true. And so, and there's something, I don't know, there's something, like I in seeing really good coaches made me realize like, that's not my path. Like, I don't even want to be able to do the work that you guys are able to do, right? So that's like a realization with myself, which is why I'm like, I feel like that way, that amount of commitment is like what I want to put into my writing and my content. Like it just feels like my path. So I have
just to pay the invoice forward on the compliments, right? Like the books, obviously that's your calling and that's what you need to do. Sure, like your writing is phenomenal. So
thanks. Yeah. So
not to throw you off there. I just wanted to.
So the reason that I wanted to have you guys, one, is I just knew it would be a great conversation. Mm-hmm. Two, you're still in this coaching space and we're in this time right now where it's like, nobody has any clue at all what's happening in the world. Mm-hmm. I think like we're so detached from like reality in some sense. Part of that is that reality is breaking down all around us. Mm-hmm. And so fear is sort of running amok. And there's all these things that I think we're not witness to. So I wanted to get with you guys and ask you kind of what is it that you're seeing manifest in your clients now? Like, I don't need personal stories, but just sort of like everybody listening to this, like maybe one out of every 10 of them actually has a coach to help them process the things that they're feeling. And so as far as like the state of the world today, the state of the human race, like what kinds of things are you, I mean, it's a bit of a departure from where we were, but what are the kinds of things that you're seeing show up in people? So for the people that don't have coaches can start to find that in themselves.
Yeah.
Okay, so for me in particular, you know, I think that kind of the methodology I take, I kind of address kind of like nervous system work as a foundational piece and then emotions and really incorporating emotions. But like what I'm trying to do is really build a bridge from their consciousness into their unconsciousness so they can walk that bridge anytime.
Right.
So what I'm seeing is just this massive feeling of not feeling safe in the present moment. And I think it's because, one, there's not, they weren't taught to process any type of intense energy, whether that's a positive or a negative emotion.
Absolutely.
So whether it's a negative emotion, they're just like completely overwhelmed by it. And if it's a positive emotion, it's completely rejected and it's just too big. So that's kind of like the foundation of what I'm seeing. But I think the people that I work with have a hard time really tapping into the unknown. And, you know, I try to use like dreams, images, mm-hmm. you know, dialoguing, like inner child stuff, just to really try to like build the bridge and start getting that imaginational capacity open. So I think there's just a lot of tendency to think their way out of situations. And, you know, we've had this conversation a million times, like it works until it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a lot of people in 2020 are bumping up against when it doesn't. And so they're like, help, because yeah. I don't know what to do. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, well, obviously if you knew what to do, you would do it. So it's deeper than your rational consciousness. Like yeah. you need to go deeper than that. And so what I've been working with people to do is to really like bridge that gap and yeah. just be the kind of the anchor, you know, because like they're walking the path. And you know, I feel like sometimes people need me to like kind of hold their hand and be alongside them. And other people just need to make sure I'm present and there just to kind of like explore out into the world of the unknown. So that's yeah. kind of my experience.
Mm. I love that. And the accountability of it, right? Like knowing that they're, somebody said the other day, like they had the thought, like, what would Tracy say or do? And I'm like, whoa, don't put me on a bracelet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not yeah. your guru. I'm not your Jesus. None of that yeah. stuff. Right? But the idea that they could take that pause even and say, what is another way through this was like work affirmed, right? Like yeah. what I'm doing is working kind of a thing. And I think, you know, like to your point, we cannot think our way through feeling and emotional issues. And that's what a lot of people are coming up against, I think. And I think with this year particularly, right, we used to be able to bury in social and bury in work and bury all of our shit under the doing, mm. right? And this year has shown us that you can only do so much and the inevitable is still in your face, right? And so it's like stripping all of that back and taking back. And at first my, you know, I was like, why are we, like the beginning of this whole thing, you know, like March, April, why are we expecting ourselves to climb mountains when the whole earth is shaking underneath us?
Right.
Right? Like, why are we trying to learn new languages with your free time? And why are you, right. like, I don't even know what, where am I going to find toilet paper tomorrow? Right. This yeah. is the real question today, right? Like, I'm not planning a, you know, to do all these massive things. And then what's shifted out of that is that people, especially in the work that I do with trauma and inner child and, you know, when I say trauma, Rachel Maddox says it, I love this idea, is that trauma is really anything that is too much, too fast, too soon. In your system, right?
Yeah.
Trauma can be walking into a surprise birthday party and you're completely unexpecting it and you have, you know, something in your past that then this triggers you. That's a new trauma, right?
Right.
And it's a totally good thing, right?
Right?
A trauma can be a car accident. It doesn't have to be a 75 car pileup. It can be, you know, a terrible interaction, you know, where you get mugged in the street. Doesn't mean you had to be, you know, held hostage for 31 days or right. Like
yeah.
everybody's experiences are personal and our pain is personal based on what we know to be true at that point. So just to side note that point for anybody who's going through something, it's not comparable. So if you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad, but your system says, actually we're a little bit traumatized from this, you know, to
yeah,
lean
yeah.
into that. So what I'm finding with my clients is that not only is the ground shaking, but we can't see the path in front of us until we go back and acknowledge the truths from our past that led us here. Because our path forward is incomplete without acknowledging all the steps we took before today.
Right.
And so it's building that bridge, like you said, for your entire life to be present to up to this day, embracing all of that, being witness to all of that, not saying it's okay or just smoothing it over, but saying, yeah, a lot of that sucked. Mm. And how can I help, like, use that to help myself to what is unfolding for me and what's going forward for me, kind of a thing. So, yeah, like, obviously, the coaching is my modality, right? But then I use breath work as necessary and meditation as necessary and journaling as necessary and all of the things that were like, oh yeah, that sounds like a good thing to do. And then we bypass because what's easy to do is also easy not to do, right? It would be easy to sit here and breathe for an hour and clear some things, but it would also be really easy to just not. You know what I mean? So then that accountability piece comes in. That's what I'm finding with people is that they need somebody else to hold the space while they break it all down.
And I also think that there's an element too of just people are seeing their paths unfold in front of them and they're refusing to acknowledge what's unfolding in front of them. It's like you're being pulled in a direction and it's asking more of you to just be on earth and just go on that path. And people are just like, no, like that's not the path I had planned. That's not it. I just spent $100,000 going to PT school. What the fuck? You know, like it's
speaking from experience.
Yeah. So it's like, you have to kind of sit and be honest with yourself. If you are actually willing to take the risk, you know, and I think there's so much unsafety and so much fear that just people aren't willing to do that.
Yeah.
You know, not saying that they're not willing. It's just like they don't feel able and they don't feel capable. And I think that's a big part of my work is like really helping people make autonomous decisions and being independent and empowered to like, just because someone told you you can't doesn't mean that you can't. Mm-hmm. Like you totally can. So.
And what feels untethering doesn't have to be bad, right? If you're untethering from an old story or an old paradigm or an old belief system, then the untethering is actually the safest, kindest, most compassionate thing you can do for yourself.
Totally. Even though it's uncomfortable.
Right. And it will be, you know, when I first sit down and talk with people, I'm like, this is going to suck a little bit.
I put that in my like application. I'm like, hey, so this isn't normal. Like the normal, like feely good stuff. You're probably going to not feel great for a little bit. And that's like the hard part too. It's like, you know, how do you run a business and tell people you're going to feel worse before you feel better?
Absolutely.
But it's like being real with that, I think really helps acknowledge like that the shadows, the evil within with acceptance and saying like, oh yeah, that's a part of me and I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah.
You don't have to act on it, but it's there and how can we choose new? So,
and we come out fighting a battle. You know, it's like the parts that we talked about just a little while ago, right? That's just while we're here. But then you tag in like epigenetics and the like generational trauma and then ancestral trauma. Like we come out fighting a battle. Totally. So when it comes to shadow and all of those other things, we talked about this on when I was on the last time, is that, you know, our shadow keeps us in morality. It keeps us in integrity. It keeps us where we're meant to be. Why do we push it down? And if we all showed up as authentic humans, it wouldn't be like, oh, that's your shadow. I see your shadow. Look at mine. Right. It's like we all have it. It doesn't make us worse or better for it, right? I can admit that there are times when I've said, you know, even a little white lie, like, oh, have you heard of so-and-so? Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. I don't know who the fuck they're talking about. You know what I mean? Yeah. But even that, something that simple, right? What is it about? It's not the fact that I just did that. Why did I feel like I needed to? What was unsafe about just admitting that I didn't know?
Right.
Right? Or, and it's so nuanced in these little things, and it comes before us. It's what's modeled for us, right? So it's breaking all these systems down. And I have, you know, similarly to you, where I'm like, look, just letting you know, this is going to be really hard, okay? This isn't like happy land and you're going to feel better tomorrow, right? You might feel better tomorrow and then the world's going to crash down around you again and it's going to suck and feel like it's all on fire. 2020 actually is. But, you know, then as you move through, right, you have clients in 6 months or a year that are like, and I would do it again in a heartbeat because I have broken the old way, the old system. And if I have to be in pain, let it be for the better. Let me fracture those systems so that if I'm going to hurt for a period of time, it's better than hurting and living under the guise that I'm fine. Yeah. In the future, you know, let it be for something rather than just monotony of the same shit.
Yeah. And I think that capacity of capability is like really the momentum, like kind of what we talked about earlier about, you know, your path being laid out and you're just afraid, but like your capacity to handle all of the hard things really helps you move forward into being more open and having a better attitude towards all of the pain that comes forward now in the present moment. So
true. Yeah.
Yeah. I think something that we're all getting a front row seat to right now is this idea that, like, you know, our entire lives we're supposed to have the answer, it seems like. Like if the teacher calls on you in school and you don't have the answer, you feel stupid, right? Like that's the last possible scenario that you want in your life is to not have the answer. Mm-hmm. But it's like so absurd to think as humans that we would ever have the fucking answer. Like sometimes, but like most time, no, right? And so I think part of it is like you're saying, there's this resistance to the unfolding of the path. And I think that what's happening is like the path is unfolding different. And so you realize you don't have the answer. You have no idea what's mm-hmm. going on. But since that's the least acceptable thing right now, it's like, well, let me cling to all these things that I do know. And let me just push that experience out of my mind. And so I think that there's all these parts. I mean, I really like to study the evolution of culture. And one of the things I'm realizing is like we have all of these cultural narratives and all these ways that we've learned to be in the world as Western culture people, as Americans, as people that have affluence. And one of those things is that, one, we're expected to always have the answer. And two, like we're always expected to be good, mm-hmm. right? Like if someone asks you, how are you doing? It's like, geez, I've been wrestling with my unconscious and I'm right. fucking miserable. And I'll tell my family that and they're like, let's do everything we can to make you better. And right. I'm like, I'm right. not asking to be better.
Right.
I'm telling you what's happening.
Right.
And it's this idea that even I've had to face that in myself, which is like, maybe it's okay for it to just not be okay. Mm-hmm. Like it's like that's part of it too. And so for whatever, you know, whatever this human experience is, it's that also.
Yeah.
And so I think that now we're in this place where so many things are not okay.
Yeah.
And like the more we try to project and act like that's not the case, the more it's coming into our consciousness. It's like the world is just pushing it at us more and more and more. And we're now in this place where like our scapegoating isn't working and our rejection into the unconscious isn't working. And so all of these things are coming up for us. And so I guess to bring this conversation somewhat full circle, it's like having tools, having coaches who can hold that space for mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. who can help you process that thing. It's like, you know, we in school the other day, for example, I'm learning the spiritual path that's like difficult. You've got to reconcile, like, it comes from the ancient Near East and we're projecting it into our American values. And so there's a lot of things that don't fit right. And so it's like causing me to have nights of not sleeping. And it's like, it's hell in my soul. I think for a good reason. One of my professors asked like, hey, who here gets counseling? And I was the only one that like was like open to it. And I was like, man, these are all the things that we're needing to undo right here. Like all of these things that we believe about ourselves, the things we believe about how our life is supposed to be, it's like all of that I think is what's causing all of this friction. And so we're all being invited into this uneasy, uncomfortable place. And then the silver lining of that is, yeah, but then you get to learn to be in this uneasy place. And
yeah.
And that's what your life's probably going
to
present you.
It's really the truest space too, you know, and not to open up a whole other podcast here, but like it goes back to in the idea of there's two parts. One is that most people have grown up in one of two ways. Either they were expected to be perfect, right? And be this show pony for the what was modeled for them and their peers, right? They have to be good and they have to be the good child and they have to get the job and they have to have the, you know, perfect life. And so that perfection is modeled for them. It's unattainable and then, or expected of them. And then they can't, you know, achieve it ever. Or they grew up with the complete opposite and their house was like a dumpster fire. And so they try to seek perfection as the antidote of chaos, right? And the perfection is just not possible, like you said, right? Like right. Living in our actual existence and what is happening is so hard for people to wrap their brains around. And then there's the part where, from what I have learned, and I'm sure you've studied this and can speak to it, both of you, is that the idea that we are defective by being human, right? And so it goes back, from what I can grasp, is that it goes back to war, where men having an emotional experience to death, to loss, to battle, to all of like being ripped away from their families, created in them things like PTSD. Mm-hmm. But then, because that took them out of war and out of their ability to serve and to be good, the governments, the overall majority, had to claim them as something, and it became defective. And so, let's say 4 generations ago, you have a man come home from war and he is now deemed defective, then everything about what he did is the bad way to be. And so everybody then learns, okay, to be emotional, my human condition is now bad, right? And this might be an oversimplification of what actually transpired, right? But like right. The Cliff Notes version is that this is one case where it was deemed bad to feel, to emote, to be, you know, to cry, to be sad, to face trauma and go, I don't know how to work through this. I'm shook, you know? And then that spread, right? And then around the same timeline, you're going through these massive hardships in our country, right? Massive diseases and infections that they're just trying to figure out how to, you know, massive loss, massive death. You come into this turn of the century and there's World War and then there is the Great Depression and all of this suffering, and don't feel about it,
right?
Don't process about it. Shove it down. We'll deal with it later. And then now we're here.
It's really interesting because... Mm. You know, I'm not going to bring up politics, but right. Something I noticed from the last debate was like Biden was so hard set on like putting an image in people's mind of like loss mm-hmm. and just like blaming someone for loss. And I'm just like, and then Trump's over here like, we're just trying to figure it out. And it's like, I'm not taking sides here, but like, no, we are just trying to figure out. No one knows what the fuck is going on. Mm-hmm. So to mm-hmm. sit here and blame somebody for this unknown experience is not helpful.
Right.
And it perpetuates that image of perfection. Like we can pedestal someone to know that that person's going to figure it out for you. And it's like, no, they're not. Mm-hmm. You are. You have to figure right. it out.
Collectively, all of us together in community and in ourselves.
There's
yeah.
no ideal with figuring this out. It's whatever works for you. Mm-hmm. And I just think that like we're so looking for someone collectively to figure it out for us. And it just isn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, something that you brought up with kind of the openness to go to counseling, I think also collectively there's a lot of noise right now, like there's a lot of voices talking, and so that in itself I think is overwhelming mm-hmm. and people who are afraid kind of either just kind of go and not ask for help, or they fall into the whims of people who aren't helpful.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I think that this is kind of doing shadow work and understanding the concept of a positive shadow is really, really helpful in this time in particular, because you can start to ask yourself questions of all of the parts of yourself that you've rejected and you feel like can't be expressed. And then you look at people who are doing that and ask them mm-hmm. for help, because those are the people yeah. who are doing the things and kind of embodying the work and living it out. But it's like, there can't be an expectation to be that person,
right?
But that person can be my guide.
And I love that you used embodying, because like just telltale sign, don't pick a coach that has it all figured out, because that's a lie, right? Like, totally. Don't pick a coach that says they have all your answers, because that's a lie. Don't pick a coach or therapist or guide or whoever, even if it's just a friend that you're attaching to. If they, like, live under this guise, right, that's what you want to be like, it is a guise, right? It's not realistic. Pick somebody who is going through it and is open about that kind of thing, right? Like, sometimes I'll check my, I'm like, okay, have I been really real on my posts? Am I inserting myself into this enough rather than just giving like some sort of guidance or path or blueprint for people, right? Am I showing my cards enough here? And I have to keep myself real like that, because otherwise we're bypassing, you know? Yeah, and I think that embodying peace is so, like, you can tell when somebody is living and breathing and speaking all the same language, in all of the same realm, in that same space, right? Yeah. Versus somebody who's just talking the talk and not actually living it.
Yeah, that kind of made me think about what I was reading about yesterday about, like, ego inflation and, like, negative inflation. Mm-hmm. It's a concept that just kind of, like, rocked my world when I read about it. But, like, I've heard of inflation where, you know, people, if they don't feel enough or worthy, they'll inflate themselves to kind of have the answers, be the person who knows. Mm-hmm. But there's another person who really strives to just want to know and be right all the time, but they don't have enough internal assertiveness to actually do that. Mm-hmm. So they make themselves wrong and flawed, and they're the best at being wrong and flawed. And so they just, like, push themselves down instead of up. And right. So it's kind of like same but different devil, but it's just an interesting phenomenon to look at, kind of social media, people in the collective, mm-hmm. how that's playing itself out,
right?
And how people are inflating themselves and how it deflates other people. Like, it's just a dynamic that's really challenging, I feel like.
Yeah, I think, you know, right now the thing that's happening, the reason, I mean, there's no, I think looking for a reason might be a problem in the first place, but, like, we are in this experience of hell, and I mean that quite literally, which is like chaos, which is nothing to hold on to, no foundation, no truth, right? Truth, you could think about it as like the foundation that sits in chaos that you can align yourself with. But what's happening is we've projected this image of have the answer, you know, project the aesthetics of having it figured out, as you're saying, like, be the perfect person, because we're not having that, like you were saying, that internal dialogue of, am I being real with my audience right now? Am I being, you know? And so now we have this position where we look at our politicians and our leaders and we're like, fucking lie to us. Because that's the only possible thing you could do, because I'm telling you, you have to have the answer.
Right.
So fucking lie to me right now make me feel better. And it's like, we're in this position where we are going to continue to reap the pain of the way that we are acting until we just stop the charade, I think.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And whether it's a politician or the bottom of an empty bottle that we're looking for the answer, that addiction to that need for seeking it outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean that because we all have our own answers. And I also wholeheartedly believe that it is fully found in community as well. And we're not meant to go it alone. So I think we all have our own answers, and we collectively provide and hold space for one another, right? Like, I get just as much out of working with people as they would get out of working with me, right? And then also in having a sit down conversation, right? I learned this year is that my platform is the last place that I want to speak new truth into somebody who is oblivious to it or in defiance of it or whatever, right? And my truth might not be theirs, but I don't reach them on a social media post.
Yeah.
I reach them in conversation. I reach them in a one-on-one, you know, and even if it is through social media, but actually having a dialogue with them rather than just a back and forth reading the post, commenting, da-da-da-da-da, whatever, you know? So it's interesting too how we seek comfort outside of ourselves because we don't know how to comfort ourselves.
Yeah. So that's a great place to probably start winding down. But I think that we are in a place right now where we are, you know, this voyeurism, like, trend has happened in the world right now, where now we are in the world, but the way that we experience it is by consuming it. And so, like you are saying, sitting down in a conversation, like I'm realizing, like for me, the things I am really uncomfortable with, like the pandemic and stuff, is the fact that like we now like never see someone's face. Like I think that there are certain like things about our humanity that are non-negotiable, and connection to people is one of those things. And like being in a lived experience, like why are we here if it is not to experience being here?
Yeah.
But it's so uncomfortable, and we've all the things we've been saying up until now. And so now we're in a place where we can consume the world from a distance, and we don't have to be part of it, and we can unfollow people we don't like, and we can, so we never have to sit in tension. We never have to actually sit in our experience anymore. Like I don't need to go out and be rejected by girls. I can just watch porn. I can just follow people on Instagram. I like, and so now we're in this place where I think the world is asking us to come home, like right. To come back to who we are, to come back to our bodies, to have our feet on the ground.
So well said.
Preach.
So well said. I know. I'm like, say it again.
Great. So, okay, so this has been a super enlightening conversation. I wasn't going to post it till December, but I'm actually going to send her live to Friday, tomorrow. I'm like, do I say today to the audience?
Okay, I know.
So,
what day is that?
So two things that I would love to end with is, one, where can people, if they're interested in breath work, coaching, unconscious work, where can people follow you? And then second, if there's any sort of last statements that you have.
Go ahead. So website is uncontrollablyme.com. The gram is my jam, which is uncontrollably_me. Mm-hmm. And you know, with breathwork, I mean, you can book on my website, sessions, or just a free meet and greet, and we can jam on like what feels good. And then, leaving, I mean, I just, you know, it's coming home to your body. Like you ended that so well, like the invitation I offer is to let it be messy. Come home to your body and experience the mess and the discomfort of that. Like I went on a small hike yesterday, but I was winded, and I was like halfway up this thing, and I'm like, dude, this is the part where people like, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to get to the top. And I stopped right there, and I was like, this is pretty fucking magical right here in this sweaty, heavy breathing, you know, like my dog's pulling me along kind of space,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So just like come home to that mess and be in it, because then you can make a map and you can set that anchor and you can define your own blueprint for yourself, so that when life is messy and it is hard and you're out of alignment, you know how to make your way back home.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that, because we all have that. I'm not worthy unless I get to the top. It's like, well, right here is pretty dope.
Yeah. Like, dude, this view is pretty sick too, right?
Yeah,
so Dr. Danielle McGinnis on Instagram, and that's my website, drdanielleMcGinnis.com. I guess final thoughts, and something that I really kind of anchor my work in, is that if it's real to you, it's real to me, and we're really gonna just like work from that point. Because for me as a coach to sit there and invalidate your experience is, it's not my job,
right?
You know, like my job is to sit with that experience, the realness of it to you, and just really understand what it means, and you know, maybe create a meaningful life from it, whatever that means.
Wonderful. So, well, thank you so much. Yeah. Thanks for conjuring up the tears.
Thanks, babe.
All right. Love you guys.